Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Vegas studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to let you know what's on my mind. My take on the geek sphere as it sits right now, constantly spinning, always changing, and Lord knows what the latest rumors are that are floating out there. But we don't deal in rumors, we deal in hard, cold facts and lots of alcohol. Sometimes those don't work very well together, though. We are sponsored by Susie Q's, who was here last week. We missed Susie so much, and it was fun to have her on the My Take, My Show last week to purvey of her thoughts and takes on stuff. Same as mine. Her opinion is always valued, and I'm actually sad she's not here today to go over kind of some of the stuff that I've got brewing in my coconut that I'm going to share and let you guys know what's going on. Not a whole lot to check out, but we will get to it momentarily after you go and check out Susie Q's website, SusieQ's.com, some fine jewelry. And if you want to see it in person, by all means, please come and check her out and us as well. The 5280 Geek team is going to be at the All Seas Fan Expo. 2 weeks. I mean, it is counting down. So Susie will be there. She will be on PJ's table for PJ Pop Culture. And, of course, Red will be there. She's got some exciting news to share with everybody. In addition to, I will be there. I will be doing some of the interviews with the celebrity guests. And in addition to, I have a couple comics, a box of them, that I'll be throwing up. I kind of was able to finally restock with the downtime. It was nice to get working and kind of sort through stuff, and I found time to actually read, which was nice. I don't have a stack of books anymore. Actually got through everything, and in doing that I found, yeah, I need to get rid of some stuff, so you benefit. Also, we'll have some action figures and stuff like that, but the more important detail, everyone is going to be there. So come check out, say hi. It is free to anyone who likes to attend. It is the DoubleTree DIA off of Tower Road and basically 470. It's the only thing out there. It is nice. It's quiet. And there's a bar. Do you need any more? But you can come and check out Susie's work firsthand. She's got her booth all ready to go, and it'll be fun. And it's free Saturday and Sunday. If you're interested, please come by. We'd like to see you. Just because you can finally do cons, the restrictions have lifted, the sun is shining, so let's move forward and doing so. It felt like normal to me because last night was, of course, Hell's Kitchen Young Guns. I can't wait to watch this season. I don't honestly know how it's going to go. I don't have a front runner yet. I don't have anyone that I'm like leaning towards. There's already people having mental breakdowns, and Gordon really hasn't yelled at anyone yet. So I'm very curious to see how this season goes with, you know, 21, 22. I think the oldest person in this group is 23, and as much as I admire them and their skills at this age set, because, I mean, even at 21, I think I was still kind of like, you know, fuddling along. I mean, my mother taught me how to cook, and, you know, watching the family over the years, and, you know, I wasn't completely unprepared for kitchen life. I consider myself a very skilled cook. A chef, if you will, as you've seen with, you know, my workings with Taste Buds and what we've done, Tawan and I, for other projects outside of 5280. So there are, you know, things that I have learned. But it's, you know, at this stage in my life that I understand so much better as far as ingredients and components and the things that go into it. At 21, I mean, I thought seasoning salt was like the deal. I mean, and some of you that know me know that I can't get away from garlic salt. So, you know, it just shows you how skewered a certain perspective or taste may or may not be at the age of 21. And I know a lot of things have changed. A lot of this generation have, you know, relied on their own. They have taught themselves way above and beyond. Thanks, you know, in part to YouTube and anything that they want to see, or, you know, have become visual learners, they can Google it, find it, watch it, and get a whole lot better than, you know, you trying to figure it out on your own, waste ingredients, make a mess, piss your mom off, you know, that sort of shit. But it's fun to see what their signature dishes were, and it didn't disappoint. They did do this kind of like tour through the last 19 seasons. This is the mark of the 20th season for Hell's Kitchen, and it's girls versus guys again. It's very, I don't know, it's very telling to see who's gonna, I don't know if it's telling, but it's curious to watch these groups interact, and there's definitely, you know, some friction already starting. Like I said, one is already having a mental breakdown, and they haven't even been yelled at by Ramsay, so I don't know how they're gonna handle it. But watching them kind of walk through the past seasons and the flashbacks to some of the, I don't know if I would call them lesser impressive moments, definitely the moments that maybe Gordon would like to forget, like, you know, duck sauce, and there's just so many awesome just moments that they flash to. Gordon being Gordon, of course, things being thrown, insults along with it. So it's worth watching it to me. And of course, my love with Gordon Ramsay is never fluctuated. Him and Guy Fieri, they can do no wrong. I love them. They're great. So I will keep you kind of up to date, posted anyway, as we go into season 24, Hell's Kitchen and the Young Guns. I'm very anxious to see what's going on. But just as excited about that as I am for tonight's premiere of the Lego Masters, I have been anxiously awaiting. I'm taking it upon myself this season to try and do the challenge as well, to the best of my ability. I mean, because there are things that I am limited as far as A for space and parts. You have that huge Lego wall, and if I had that in my house, I don't think I'd ever leave. I honestly think that I would sit and create all damn day and never, ever come out. But unfortunately, we live in the real world that I have to leave and come to the studio. So, I have decided that in my quest to become a better Lego master, I'm going to try and replicate or do my own version of the challenges. I know a lot of it is time sensitive, and I will try and hold myself to it. I'll let you know how this experiment goes. It's probably going to crash and burn horribly, but at any rate, I think it will be kind of fun just to see if I can do it, because I want, this is my idea of training. Because and it makes perfect sense if you think about it. Because you have everyone that does like training for American Ninja Warrior, American Gladiators, the other, you know, obstacle courses and all that. So if you're going to train to be on Lego Masters, I think you need to sit down and this is the best way that I can think to train and prepare myself to submit to being on Lego Masters. I have a horrible feeling that I won't make it. Because they don't have a partner. Red would probably be up for it, but I don't know if she would be sold on the idea of going on national television to embarrass herself as we try and figure out how to build something out of Lego. Red and I would just probably sit there and just like act like a married couple and make fun of each other, which would be fun, but we wouldn't make it past the first episode. Maybe the second. Maybe we can make it at least to the second episode. And there's no booze involved. So that's a handicap right there. I'm curious to see how we would do. But if you would like to be my partner, if I make it onto Lego Masters, if you would like to be my partner, send me a message. I'd love to hear and see if I'm the only one that is completely out of his freaking head thinking this way, or what may or may not be a good idea. Yeah. What else is going on? So there's a lot of stuff that's hit. And I got my take on a few different topics this week that are, I don't know if they're kind of with everyone else. We'll start with the Friends reunion, which was fun and kind of a, you know, fresh, not so fresh take on what was going on behind the scenes. They really honestly didn't come up with any secrets that, you know, everyone didn't already know. They didn't address that there are some things about Friends that have not aged well and might be viewed a bit inappropriate, the whitewashing of the cast and things of that nature. In addition to Matt Perry's addiction issues, which we know reflected on his performance and his appearance on the show, there is like this brief moment that they touch on it, and Matt kind of just was like almost beside himself of like, if people didn't laugh, I felt like an absolute failure. And it kind of like they glossed over it for a minute. Then Lisa Kudrow voiced kind of like, we had no idea that, you know, it was affecting you and you felt this way. So there is some kind of acknowledgement. Is there a payoff to watching the reunion? I would say yes. Just from the standpoint of it really brings back some of the memories and other stuff. They do kind of this interesting little, you know, trip around the globe of the impact Friends have made on other people in other countries, people here in the United States as well, and just the Friends mania that swept the world, because it was global. I mean, it wasn't just this nation that they were, a force. It was around the world. So the impact is rather large, and it's almost kind of daunting. And they even talked about this when they were like, you know, when everything was going on, it was just us. It was the circle. No one else had done it, and it was just the six of them in it together. They couldn't talk to their friends. They could, but, you know, as far as anyone that would understand or, you know, kind of been able to sympathize, it wasn't there. So they relied heavily upon each other. So there are some heartfelt moments. They do visit the set, and, you know, they kind of do their own little walkthroughs and their moments of memories. I think by far Matt LeBlanc is still, I think he's probably the most grounded and most realistic out of all of them. I think I could just see him back in the Friends days and him just basically cutting up. And that's kind of what he does for the special. I mean, it really plays well. It works well. And I'm really, you know, I have a newfound respect for him, because it was like he's just not taking it seriously. It's just what it was. Here's his view. And, you know, he appreciates everybody. He's got a genuine soft spot to everyone that, you know, he worked with. So it was kind of cool. Schwimmer is still kind of, I don't know, a flake in my opinion. I'm not a David Schwimmer fan. I didn't like Ross. I thought Ross, I needed to just punch in the face. I know it's kind of harsh to say, but I wasn't a Ross fan. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed something on Ross's character, or just, you know, out of the loop on that one. But I just, nah. No. And, of course, the girls are the girls. They haven't really changed. Doing the table read, it was almost like instinct that they just immediately flipped into their characters. They did have some special appearances from, you know, other celebrities that were part of the show that, you know, admired the show. So it was kind of fun to see this back and forth of what happened, where they are, the impacts, and having James Corden as the host, as the interviewer was fun. I mean, he's kind of becoming the ultimate fanboy when it comes to things like this. I mean, I like him way better than Jimmy Kimmel, and I think he's much more approachable, and he's just kind of funny, and he's just so cuddly, just kind of a lovable little guy. So him doing the Friends reunion thing, I think, was absolutely perfect. I think Colbert would have been just as good, but James really just hit the cheap seats with the whole thing. Overall, it was fun. I'll probably never watch it again. I got my fix, and that was kind of it. But when I'm looking at this and I'm comparing it to like the reunion of the Fresh Prince, it's a stark difference. I mean, there is a big it's weird because when you're watching the Fresh Prince reunion, they get down into, you know, what was going on. And of course there was the controversy with, you know, Aunt Liv and the actress that played her being replaced, what were things like on the set, and there's some working through emotions. This was like, you know, going to group. This is sitting down and, you know, getting some therapy taken care of and, you know, work through all of it. So when you compare the two, Friends, light, bubbly, you know, kind of glosses over some things. Fresh Prince kind of just went right at it. And I don't want to say that the Fresh Prince was a better reunion, but I think that it was a bit more realistic, a little more believable. Because even like Matt Perry was, because they're like, well, you know, do you guys still talk to each other? And like, yeah, we talk to each other all the time. And Matt Perry's all like, I don't hear from any of you guys. And I don't know if that was a joke, but I mean, it was harsh to hear that. And I'm kind of like, okay, I can kind of see it. And I don't know what they did to get him there. He seems like very reluctant. And there's a couple cutscenes that they do that he's not in as they're wandering around looking at the set and stuff. So it's kind of strange that maybe he was just the last one to get there or just wasn't completely sold on the idea. I don't know. But it is fun. It's a nice, refreshing little take on what, you know, everything was and how it used to be. And could Friends be done today? Maybe. I don't know. I think it just was one of those moments in time, same as Seinfeld. There are things on Seinfeld that you just probably, it would be insensitive to do these days. And I think that's kind of where you're at with some of the Friends stuff. So yeah, there you go. I liked it. It's fine. There you go. That's my take on that one. What else is coming up? So also coming out of the HBO Max Friends reunion was the amazing, absolutely stunning 5B season for Lucifer on Netflix. And it was, I mean, I'm only halfway through because it's only another 8 episodes. And I just blazed through like the first half, not even thinking. God, of course, shows up, the Allstate guy. And it is very clever. And I know I'm going to catch flack from this because I liked it, but it is kind of hokey, I will admit. The second episode of 5B, they finally get to do the musical episode. I don't know when this became a thing, and even the person I was watching this with was like, when was this like a thing that all of the shows had to do kind of like a musical, you know, number, or you know, like a musical episode like they did with Buffy and Angel and all of that stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. That's an excellent question. But they do it, and the songs that they pick are really, really well thought out. And I love Tom Ellis as a performer. And I guess there was an issue with one of the songs that they wanted to do. Motovich, who is one of the executive producers, said they had originally wanted to do Father and Son by Cat Stevens for the final scene between Lucifer and God. But unfortunately, that song was basically not available. So it's kind of sad. So it further goes on to say, so then we went after the Les Mis song. I remember Tom called me up and played it. He just learned it on the guitar. I kept thinking of, my God, there are so many fans who would freak out if Tom just called them and got on a guitar for them. I cried the first time I heard him do it. I was like, this is the song. It just became the one I wanted more than anything. And you got, I'm not going to ruin it. I don't want to put any spoilers out there yet because, like I said, it just premiered. And if you're like me, you're probably already blazed through most of it. But I know there's some out there, and I don't want to ruin it. And being a huge Les Mis fan, which we've talked about before in the past, and how much I really, really love that play. But to hear a Les Mis song out of Lucifer was one of the things I never thought I would hear. Now, how does the story and everything else go for the remainder of the season? So far, so good. There are some major revelations going on that, of course, are the big setup for season 6. That is right. Don't forget, there is another season that is basically this whole season 5 is setting up the final season for Lucifer. And it's not going to be anything like we have seen before from what the cast is telling us, which I'm fine with. I mean, I like this one, and I found myself laughing a whole lot more for the 5B than I probably have in previous seasons. And I think you're starting to see the comfort of the cast in addition to the characters themselves. We know these characters, and as much as they have grown, they still are suffering from the, you know, their inner demons and insecurities that have been kind of there and ruling them through the majority of the series. But we do get some closure. We do get some moments that are just absolutely inspiring. I mean, it's some really good stuff, and there's a lot of humor. I'm laughing, like I said, a whole lot more than I honestly ever thought I would when it comes to the Lucifer series. So to see this and watch it kind of develop and grow, I'm very excited to see what season 6. Of course, I've got to finish season 5, and it's kind of like when you're reading that novel and you don't want to get to the end. You're just kind of pushing it off because you know as soon as you do, then it's over, and then you got nothing. There's other shows I need to pick up on. I, of course, didn't watch Bad Batch this week, which I will, and we still have the ongoing Flash, which there's some bitter rumors floating around. They're saying next season is the final shot for the Flash, and I'm really hoping that rumor is not true. If there's one series that I think Arrowverse has going for it besides the recent launches of Stargirl and Superman and Lois, I think Flash is probably its flagship show. The other ones are kind of I mean, Legends of Tomorrow it continues with its same kind of tongue-in-cheek humor and kind of, you know, silliness, but Batwoman is basically, I've just written off, I'm done. You got Black Lightning, which was a strong finish. I liked how they wrapped that series up and have kind of moved forward with the family and with Black Lightning. We'll see how it goes when they bring in Painkiller, which we've talked about, and hope that maybe they'll take a page from what's going on with Superman and Lois and Stargirl and kind of step up the production and the storytelling. I think the CW has been kind of narrow-minded or, you know, very blinders on when it comes to their storytelling. And as each show from the Arrowverse have kind of followed the same formula, the same look, we get that little taste with Stargirl. Great. Now we've got Superman and Lois, which is by and far way better than anything I thought it was going to be. And you know how, you know, touchy and just how much I don't like Superman. So to see them do this series so well and the components that they've integrated with the kids and Lois and all of that, yeah, thoroughly impressed. So if they can do Painkiller that way, it may be a saving grace to the show. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with Black Lightning to begin with, and I think them canceling the show is a bit premature for a character that nobody knows and is just kind of, you know, nobody, I don't want to say nobody cares about, but I was more interested in, you know, Black Lightning and the kids than I am Painkiller. So I just am not, I'm not sold on it yet. And maybe my opinion will change when, you know, Painkiller rolls around. Who's to say? But if Flash is looking at the end and season 8 is it, that is way too premature. I think the show could definitely go for a few more years. I know season 7 does mark the end of two characters leaving the series, which kind of, one I'm sad to see go, the other one I'm like, okay, fine. You should have been gone a couple seasons ago, in my opinion, but it's fine. But maybe we'll get more confirmation on that. I mean, Killer Frost's storyline is absolutely pointless. I think they're just trying to recover from the Rona on this season, and I don't know if they really thought it all through. In addition to Elongated Man, of course, was originally supposed to be part of the team, and he's not. And I just think the show suffered a very larger setback than they had anticipated with the delays and everything else. So good luck, guys. Don't quit on me now, because if they quit, that's it. I mean, I'm out on the Arrowverse, because I just don't care. Flash is the only thing that's got me coming back. That's it. If you cancel this, I'm going to be furious. I'm sending you a note right now. What else? The film, I wanted to see this for multiple reasons. And I don't know if we're going to do a meat and potatoes on this yet, because I'm not sure they have seen it yet. I know it came out direct to Disney Plus for the $29.99 and is in the theaters now. Of course, I'm talking about Cruella with Emma Stone in the lead role. And let me tell you something, I liked it. Holy crap, did I like it. I wanted to see it just because of Emma Stone, and I was very compelled by just the character. I think it's an interesting take, and I like how Disney's done different views of their characters over the last few years. And I think this is an excellent perspective on how things can go horribly wrong for a character. Now, watching Emma Stone perform is absolutely mind-blowing. I know my friend compared her to, she was doing her Eva Green voice, which, granted, okay, I can see where the Eva Green kind of plays into it, but I don't think Eva Green could have done the subtle characters twitches and twists that we saw with Emma. Because as I'm watching it, and yeah, you can kind of like, okay, that would be Eva Green's voice, and it would be easily to swap the two as far as the voice, but as far as the acting and the characterization, Emma just kills this. There's a scene where she's, you know, in Cruella gear, and she's standing there, but she's got the posture and the mannerisms of the animated character from 101 Dalmatians. I mean, it is eerie how accurate, and you can just kind of see her kind of hunching over, and just how she's acting is great. I mean, just wow. There were kids in the audience. There was a dad there with three little ones, and of course my friend's like, I don't know if this film is necessarily for them. And to be honest with you, after thinking about that, I'm not sure either. I mean, there's nothing, you know, bad, but it's an intense film. Of course, as they explain Cruella's past, and we see her come from basic, you know, childhood and everything else to just before 101 Dalmatians. We see it all go throughout the 70s and the fashion rage that was completely engulfing the scene at the time, and you know what's bold and interesting and new, and that's kind of, it's kind of fun to see that whole breakdown and that visual that it paints for the decade, for the 70s. And it works so well, especially with some of the shots and how they approach the Cruella character. There are some moments where I'm sitting there, okay, that didn't exist in the 70s. there are a couple of those moments, but Jasper is exactly like I would have envisioned him. There's some interesting choices when it comes to CGI that I'm kind of like, okay. Okay, interesting choice, but I understand why. It's a creative choice, and if you're looking for a certain response from an animal, if you can't train them, just CGI them. And there's a couple of those moments. But all in all, I'm very, very compelled by this film. I think it is absolutely worthy of going and seeing this in the theater. And I'm probably going to add this to the collection for sure when it comes out for DVD. I absolutely loved it. I mean, it's not just because I love Emma Stone. I know I love Emma Stone a lot, but there's more to this, and it really plays well. And how it ends, which I won't give away, does set up. It does leave kind of a small amount of wiggle room between where Cruella ends and 100 Dalmatians begins. It's not much, but there is room. So if this does smell hit as well as I think it does, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of try and shoehorn another one in there, because it does set up 101 Dalmatians, and they could actually easily move away from that while Cruella's doing whatever Cruella wants to do, and then we come back to 101 Dalmatians. It really could, but if I were a director, just saying. They may just even call it a dip and call it a day, which I think would be great. I really have no problems with where it ended, how it ended, and it really makes sense. They tied it all together very well. So I gotta applaud you, Disney. The mouse got it right. So happy to see that. Yay! Let's hear it for the mouse. No, let's not. On other news, and that's my take on Cruella. Go see it. There you go. And other news, and I think this is the last bit of news that I got. Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot going on this week, probably because of the holiday weekend and stuff going on. But Netflix Sandman has cast Death and a whole lot more of the Dreaming Team. And it's very interesting choices, to say the least. Some of them are no-brainers, of course. Which I'm kind of scratching my head, because I honestly don't know. When I was sitting and thinking about this as I'm looking at the cast, I don't know who I would cast as Death. That's an interesting choice, and I don't know if there's an easy answer or not. To be honest with you, how do you cast for that role? I mean, Death has a very crucial role and relationship with the Sandman, with Morpheus. So how they're going to work with each other and build that brother-sister bond, I'm very curious to see. Now, Kirby Howell Baptiste is Death. They announced her this week to fans that have been clawing to get information about the Sandman, and it is... I think it's great. I don't have a negative take on this. The actress is brilliant. I've seen her in a couple of things. Can she do Death? I don't know, to be honest with you. It can't be any worse than what they did to American Gods, is the only thing I keep saying to myself. That's kind of become my new mantra that I'm saying over and over and over again, that it can't be any worse than what they did to American Gods. I hope. My fingers are crossed that I actually do start how the Sandman series starts with issue one. And looking at the cast, I don't see anyone for Cain and Abel. I don't see anything yet that would indicate. And maybe we will. I don't know. But we already have got Desiree, Despair, Lita Hall, Ethel Crisp, Young Ethel Crisp, John Dee, Rose Walker, already cast. All those characters are done and in the bag. The ones that may stand out, and there's a couple, there's one big head scratch. I mean, tremendous head scratch. Two. But the first one, of course, let me get to the heavy hitters, of course, is Patton Oswalt to voice Matthew the Raven, which is kind of Morpheus' little buddy and pal. And I think that works. I mean, Patton Oswalt has now become that voice, that narrator, that conscience. He really does fit that role well, and his voice works great for it. I hate to say it, that I have watched a couple of the MODOK episodes that he voices, and it is humorous. It's a little out there for my taste, but there are moments where I'm just like, oh, Okay. Stephen Fry is going to be Gilbert, which I love Stephen Fry. The man can do no wrong. Of course, he goes back to my days of watching The Blackadder, and I think he's just great. He's a staple for British television and movies, and you can't go wrong with Stephen Fry. The man is just so poised and just put together that I'm really just so great. Jenna Louise Coleman. Now, Jenna Louise Coleman, you may recognize the name if you're a Doctor Who fan. She also appeared in Avengers, or actually Captain America. She was a date for, was it Bucky? I think they were on a date together. So, Jenna Louise Coleman is no stranger to the screen or TV or any of that. However, their choice, for a character is a bit, I don't know how I feel about this. Instead of us getting John Constantine, we're getting Joanna Constantine, and it's played by Jenna Louise Coleman. I don't know how I feel about that. I like gender bending as much as the next person, but John Constantine I want John Constantine from Legends to come over and do the Constantine there, because I think that has been probably one of the best embodiments that we've seen for the character. I mean, he's even voiced the character in the cartoons, so why not continue his run with it? And I don't know if Jenna can pull off the snarky kind of just bitey personality that John has, that the Constantine that we're used to. And I'm curious to see how this really turns out, because, I mean, we loved her in Doctor Who. Don't get me wrong. Doctor Who is Clara. I know a lot of Who fans either loved her or hated her, but it is what it is when it comes to... So the other interesting thing, and I don't know, you mean you either like her or hate her as a companion when it comes to Doctor Who, and that's fine. Yeah, it is what it is. So I'm curious to see how she approaches being Constantine, and what kind of Constantine are we going to get? A more sympathetic one? I don't know if Jenna can be... I mean, she's got a certain feistiness to her, but, I mean, want to look at her, kind of just want to pinch her cheeks because she's adorable. She's just cute. So I don't know. It's going to be kind of weird. And the same thing kind of goes when you're dealing with the Lucifer character. Of course, Lucifer's first appearance was in the Sandman series and then got his own ongoing series after a limited one. The person that will be playing Lucifer in the series for Sandman is Gwendolyn Christie, which is very interesting. I know the showrunners are saying it's fine and everyone's kind of cool with it. It does kind of remind me of the casting that we saw when we saw the original Constantine film with Keanu Reeves, and the Archangel Gabriel was, you know, it was an interesting cast. It was a female Gabriel versus a male, but it was kind of very, very androgynous as far as how they approached it. And I'm wondering if this is going to be kind of the same thing. Of course, if you're kind of scratching your head who Gwendolyn Christie is, it is Phasma from Star Wars, the latest trilogy to be released. So she's big. She's tall. I'm curious. She's going to be like a head over everybody else. So I'm thinking from that standpoint, that's an amazing pick. I mean, it is kind of a different take when you're looking between Tom Ellis's Lucifer versus what her Lucifer could possibly be. There are going to be some comparisons. Don't question it for a second, because I know there are a lot of fans of the current Lucifer series, but I feel that the only reason, and maybe a couple reasons, but I'm sure this is probably the contributing factor, is that they couldn't get Tom Ellis out from Lucifer to come over and do Sandman, because if they're already doing production and they're already working on stuff, there's, you know, other issues to take into consideration for that. Also, maybe, you know, Tom Ellis is kind of tired of playing Lucifer. He's probably ready to do something else. And I have a feeling the Sandman show is going to be quite different than what we have come to know and expect from the Lucifer series. I really think, and this is going to be a bit darker just a bit, just a wee bit. So those are the kind of like the major shockers when it comes to the character leaks so far. And of course, there's more to come, because Neil Gaiman has actually been very vocal about what's going on with the series. In fact, let us scroll down. This is a direct quote from Neil. Of course, he says, there are more delights and nightmares cast than I've listed here. And we have a few more secrets up our sleeves. I can't wait until you can start watching. So Neil is very plugged in with this project. He's getting stuff daily. In fact, he said, every afternoon I get an email telling me that there are dailies from The Sandman ready to be watched. It's the best bit of the day. Once every couple of weeks, I get an email letting me know there's a finished episode waiting for me to watch. It's the best bit of the month. The Sandman is being made, and, well, it's The Sandman, which is the best thing of all. And I kind of agree. I mean, like I said, if you haven't picked up the first trade paperback, the artwork that Keith does is mind-blowing. The story itself is very, very intoxicating, and it does hook you rather quick. And I'm kind of... the one thing that I've always been impressed with Neil's game and skill, and we talked about this with Susie, is just how deep Gaiman goes into the mythos, and just doing the research for the religious aspect, for the characters, and the things he comes up with are just absolutely just stellar. So I'm excited to see what we do, and I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see what we get out of Jenna as a Constantine. So we'll see. What else is going on? This caught my eye, and I think I need to share this because I have a feeling this is going to be hitting my top five for comics. If you don't check that out, please do. It's over on the 5280 page, of course. Scotty Young and Jorge Corona take readers on a haunting tale in the Me You Love in the Dark. Of course, this is the creative team from Middle West, which I raved about, and I thought it was probably one of the better creative endeavors that I ever saw. And especially when you consider, you know, Scotty Young writing it and Jorge's just visuals and pencils on that series were spectacular. So there are some images that are released. Of course, the comic book has not hit yet. I do have a feeling, though, that this will be the next big hot book. If you are not signed up with it, I would absolutely get it signed up on your pull list for now. I'm looking to see if we've got a date that when this was supposed to be released. August 4th for issue one. And it's 32 pages. So nothing too bad. I don't know. I mean, and it's only five issues, so it's definitely worth picking up. And if you watched anything that happened with Middle West, that series, the first couple of issues just shot to number one like a bullet. My God, it was worth it, of course, I think, anyway, because I loved the series. But that's what I like about Image. They do the non-cape stuff so well, and I'm up for a good horror book, especially given the time. August? That's really, yeah, that's perfect to me. So we'll see. Of course, Scotty Young has been writing Strange Academy and doing a stellar job of it. So I'm not going to be disappointed with this. And even just looking at some of the pencil stuff that Jorge put out there, and the cover itself looks pretty creepy. Some dark stuff. Yeah, so pick it up, do it, add it to your pool. No, not gonna do any Schwarzenegger today. What else is going on? I think that kind of wraps it up. It is, like I said, kind of a short week, So we do have later this week coming up my interview with Matt Campbell. We also have a toy opening for that, as well as we take a look at the Bad Batch new toy line that just came out that you'll probably, not probably, you don't want to miss, because the sculpt and everything on those figures is very impressive. But look for that probably on Thursday to hit both the podcast as well as our YouTube channel. What? You don't know we have a YouTube channel? Go over and subscribe. That way you don't miss any of the latest and greatest and stuff that's coming out. And especially with our shenanigans, Wakeman, myself, and PJ Pop Culture do get a little out of control. And it's okay. It's all in good fun because that's what we do. Anything else? Nothing else is catching my eye as I scroll through the Geekverse. So that calls it for this week. If you've got any comments or questions or anything you'd like to know, please, by all means, put them in the comments below. And give us a like, give us a subscribe, and share us with all of your friends, because we're here to entertain and make you laugh. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.